Welcome to your go-to source for entertainment.
Wait for it.
Gaming.
Wait for it.
Anime.
Plus Ultra!
Mr. Eric Almighty and Phil the Filipino? Yeah, they've got you covered. And all you gotta do is wait for it. This is the Wait For It Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Wait For It Podcast, and welcome to a brand new edition of Filuminati. I am your co-host, Phil Smith, aka Phil the Filipino. I hope everyone's having a great November so far, and you have enjoyed the episodes we have put out. We're coming up on the end of the year, which is exciting, so that means end of the year awards, the look ahead to 2023, all that kind of stuff. I'm really excited for it. For those of you that might be brand new and don't know, we are located here in Northeast Florida, and we're kind of on the cusp of another hurricane. I mean, that's just kind of life for all of you other fellow Floridians. You know that this is just kind of like another day, but it made for preparing for this podcast a little interesting. I left the house like right after work to go get my ticket to go pick up God of War Ragnarok here tonight at midnight at my local GameStop, and the sky was looking a little rough. So we'll see how the rest of the week goes. Eric and I are supposed to go see a basketball game down in Orlando tomorrow night, and now I don't know if that's happening, so I guess I'll just be playing a whole lot of God of War Ragnarok, which we will be talking about at the end of the month. But that's not why you are here today. You are here to listen to more crazy fan theories that I was able to find across the internet. Now, in previous episodes, I've done fan theories on the MCU, The Office, Parks and Recreation, video games, other movies, things of that nature. Well, today, I wanted to go back to the well of Disney Pixar. It's been a while since we've done a Disney Pixar episode, so I was like, man, why not? Let's go ahead and see what kind of crazy fan theories people have cooked up. And guys, I have four for you today, and each one of them is really, really good. Some of them are also a little dark. I just want to warn you guys here right off the bat. Not all of these are going to be sunshine and rainbows. A couple of them, again, are kind of messed up. So again, for all you brand new listeners that are here for the first time, make sure to stick around to the end of the episode, and I'll let you guys know where you can find all the rest of our episodes, as well as our social media pages. And for all you returning listeners, welcome back. Thank you guys all so much for the support, as always, and we could not do this without you. So let's jump into this here. As you guys have noticed over the last few episodes of Filuminati, I've kind of gone away from the like actual conspiracy theories. The name Filuminati may not work necessarily for fan theories, but then I was like, you know what? I'm overthinking this. I'm just going to keep the name and refocus the episodes, because let's face it, there are already enough ridiculous conspiracy theories out there. There are probably people much more qualified than me to cover those. So, you know what? Let's just have some fun and find some cool fan theories. And I got some interesting ones here for you today from the world of Pixar. Let's go ahead and start with a fun one from Finding Nemo. I mean, I say fun, but it has to do with a fish eating fish. So let's talk about this one. And this is from Reddit user Fuiji22. States that in Finding Nemo, the little green fish at the AA meeting hastily leaves because he was going to eat Marlin and Dory. He later tries to eat them again. And this is the fish that you meet where they first meet the sharks in Finding Nemo. And, you know, they do the oath, fish are friends, not food, all that kind of stuff. I guess that fish actually has a name, and his name is Blenny. I did not know that. Now, this theory states at first glance, it seems like he is shaking because he is scared. But what if his shaking is actually the result of withdrawal from his fish eating addiction? At the end of Finding Nemo, there is an end credit scene that shows the little green fish from the meeting eating an anglerfish. From this clip, we know he is a fish eater. We don't know how he and the hammerhead shark met, but it is possible that he came along to the meeting because he wanted to manage his addiction to eating fish. For the few seconds he is on screen during the meeting, we see him make a couple of glances towards Marlin and Dory. He even gives them one last glance over before he chooses to leave quickly. Furthermore, if he was brought there by force by the hammerhead, why doesn't he look up at him before he runs off to check that he isn't watching him? He just swims away and none of the sharks seem to care. Possibly because he is a regular at their meetings. In fact, he doesn't seem to pay much attention to the sharks at all, almost as if he is distracted by something else. Lastly, in the end credits scene, we see him wandering through the dark trench, the same one that Marlin Dory went into. My guess is that he was unable to control his addiction and follow them into the trench to eat them, but got lost in the darkness and could not find them. Instead, he found and ate the anglerfish. Think about it, if his shaking was due to fear, then why on earth would he go down into the dark trench? Another user in the comment section notes that after he does eat the anglerfish, he stops shaking, kind of like an addict once they get a fix, so it's like he has satisfied that craving. Really, really like coming across theories like this that are well thought out. Even though this one isn't super long, it has examples to back it up. I really like this one, and who knew? Blenny, who again didn't know he had a name, was a fish-eating addict, and you know what? I hope he gets the help that he needs. Let's move into the next one here from Reddit user Vexilius. And this is an alternative view of Wally stating that he is not a savior, he's actually the serpent. In every analysis of Pixar's Wally, people look at him as this messianic figure, someone who sacrificed himself in order to save mankind and then comes back from the dead. However, there's an alternative character interpretation for Wally and enough evidence to support it. He's not a Christ-like figure, instead he might have more in common with Satan as depicted in Genesis. First of all, let's take a look at mankind in Wally's universe. At first sight, and judging it by our standards, they are not happy. However, almost all of the issues that have plagued mankind don't exist anymore. There's no war, illness, hunger, hatred, or discrimination. Religion and politics seem to be non-existent as well. People live long, healthy lives where they have everything they need at their disposal. Generations have passed since they left Earth, which has turned into a barren wasteland. And aside from the captain of the ship, no human even knows that it exists. Why would they look forward to returning to a place where they had to fight for survival when they have lived their whole life being served by robots in a comfortable, albeit boring, existence? They basically live in a paradise. Then comes Wally, a robot who gave Eve a seedling, which triggered the captain's desire to bring mankind back to Earth. In Genesis, the fruit the serpent gave to Eve was referred to as the fruit of knowledge of good and evil. And for the captain, the seedling was basically this. Prior to interacting with it, he went along by performing his required duties and ensuring mankind's survival in a paradise-like environment. However, after knowing of the existence of the seedling, he started doing research on Earth, which then turned into a deep desire to return to it. He lost his innocence by gaining a new understanding of the world, just like Adam and Eve realized they were naked after eating the forbidden fruit. Do you see the parallelism here? We have an entity, Wally slash Satan, who gives an object, seedling, apple, to a robot or woman named Eve, which starts a chain of events that led to mankind losing a paradise and getting stranded on Earth. By the end of the movie, we see that mankind has settled back on Earth and have returned to activities such as agriculture and fishing, something that brings a resemblance to Genesis 3:19, by the sweat of your brow will you eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. Mankind doesn't have a carefree existence anymore. Now that they have to work in order to eat, and it shouldn't take too long before disparities will start to appear. Some will be able to have more possessions than others, which will then spark the flames of hatred against humans, and then the cycle will start anew. It wouldn't be surprising if generations later, the people in Wally's universe start telling tales of a time where they lived in a place of eternal bliss, until a tempter gave a woman named Eve a plant, which led to mankind's downfall. So this is kind of one of those messed up ones that kind of paints Wally obviously in a totally different light. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that I don't like this movie anyway. So the fact that this makes Wally essentially a villain or Satan, you know, whatever you want to call him, I like this one a lot. Also, don't come for me for not liking Wally. It's boring. It's lame. He's kind of cute, I guess, but no, not for me. Let's move to another one here that's even darker than that. And it's another movie that I really don't care for, which is Up. The first few minutes of the film are really good, but the rest of it is just boring. I don't really care for the old man. I don't really care about the kid. Also, you know, you guys know that that kid probably died out there, right? Like, he wouldn't have been able to get home without the old man, and he was already, like, old as shit. And then he's probably, no, Carl, that's the name of the old man, right? I don't even remember the kid's name. Kid's probably stranded, just so you guys know. That's my theory, is that Carl died out there in the forest, in the jungle, and that kid is just stranded. So not only did he kidnap this child, probably got him killed. Anyway, that's not the theory here. That's just my theory. This one is that the Fredrickson house caused Ellie's infertility. It's not funny. That sentence is not funny, but it's just funny how dark this got very, very quickly. And this is from Reddit user Dr. Fuyutsuki. While watching Pixar's Up, I noticed young Ellie looks rather red in the cheeks during one of the scenes. That led me down a rabbit hole, remembering incorrectly, it would seem, that something like scarlet fever could cause infertility. But it did point to a possible alternative that could cause her infertility. Carl and Ellie seem to have spent a decent amount of time in their clubhouse. Ellie more so, as the clubhouse appears to be well established by the time Carl meets her. They later buy and remodel the clubhouse, making it their home. Carl is 78 when he begins his journey south, according to the Disney fandom wiki, and if the release date is present day for the journey, Carl would have been born in the early 1930s. Prior to 1940, around 87% of homes used lead-based paint. Lead exposure can cause reproductive problems in human reproductive systems by messing with hormones. By playing in a home built prior to 1940 that was clearly in disrepair and then remodeling that home themselves, both Ellie and Carl were likely exposed to a significant amount of lead, dust, and paint particles containing lead. Sadly, that acute lead exposure rendered Ellie infertile. It also may have been the cause of her death. Lead is stored in the bones, and as your bones degrade with age, that lead is released back into your bloodstream. One of the key symptoms is weakness. Acute lead poisoning can lead to brain or kidney damage and death. So congratulations, everyone. That user made up even darker. Somebody else also pointed out that there was probably asbestos in the installation for the house. So honestly, this was just a bad decision by Carl and Ellie altogether. And even if they had kids, who's to say that Carl wouldn't just leave them in a jungle somewhere? I don't know. Maybe it's good that he wasn't a dad. Anyway, I told you this episode was going to get a little dark. I don't like Up. I don't like Wall-E. So let's end on a movie that I really, really like, and that's Encanto. And this is a theory I've seen posted elsewhere, and I really, really like this one. This one's a little bit longer, so this is a good place to wrap it up. And this is from Reddit user Trashbag Tater Tots. Love that username. It says that the holder of the candle subconsciously chooses their gifts. All of the Madrigal's gifts are things that Abuela needed before they were born, with one exception. When the triplets got their gifts at the same time, their powers were all things that Alma would have been desperate for as the governess of a new community that had nothing but the clothes on their backs and a magic house to babysit the children for them. Weather control to ensure sustainable food, prophecy to warn of incoming danger, healing for the injured and the sick. When Isabella came of age, Abuela would have needed someone to carry all of the family's successes into the new generation as a symbol of its literal growth and fertility. I think, to Abuela's very grief-stricken heart, seeing her granddaughter finally get to do what she never could, to be happily married and able to raise her own children in a beautiful place that's never known violence, that was what she really longed for. When Luisa came of age, Abuela was focused on the expansion and growth of the town. Isabella is the thriving future of the town personified in Abuela's mind, so the next issue is to make sure the new generation has houses to live in and churches to go to, cue the super strength. When Dolores comes of age, the town was expanding so much that Abuela wouldn't have been able to keep track of everything going on outside of the family. The only time she ever asked Dolores to use her powers, she asked her to eavesdrop on the Guzmans to help arrange Isabella's engagement. Abuela's dedication to helping the townspeople is hugely important to her belief in the Encanto. The only problem is that the townspeople have come to her for help. Dolores' gift ensures that anyone who gets lost, hurt, or otherwise separated from everyone can still be heard calling for help. And I bet part of Abuela is terrified that Dolores won't know the sound of men on horseback when she hears them. With Camilo, it seems obvious to me that his powers are fueled by Abuela's fear of losing anybody ever again. Julieta has been healing the sick and injured since she was a little girl, so it's unlikely that any deaths within the Encanto have been anything but lethal accidents and natural causes since she got her powers. The only time Abuela asks him to use his powers, it's because, quote, we need another Jose. Between the deep need for control due to trauma and a terrible fear of never seeing someone again, I think Camilo's powers are an expression of Abuela's longing for Pedro, or at least to protect her family from ever suffering that kind of loss. When Mirabel came of age, Abuela really only had one need left, for someone to carry on her legacy, to be the next holder of the candle. When Abuela says that she doesn't know what Mirabel's gift will be, but it will be just as special as she is, I think it's because she's actually out of things to hope it will be. Luisa will build her town the way she wants, Isabella will live out her dream for her, the only thing she needs now is an heir, except she's not ready to step down yet. Luisa's strength is her need to make sure everyone is sheltered and safe. Isabella's plants come from her need to see new life growing in her town. Dolores' hearing comes from Abuela's need for news and gossip in town. Camilo's shapeshifting is preemptively working against losing someone. Mirabel's gift is to be Abuela's heir, to serve as governess when Abuela is gone. The fear and needs become less and less urgent until they don't need to be magical gifts at all. That's why Mirabel doesn't get a door until Casita is broken and remade. It's not that she herself is the miracle, it's that the miracle was passed down to her during her gift ceremony. Abuela just wasn't ready to give up her power as matriarch of the family. Casita even finally breaks apart during Mirabel's attempts to take that power from her, with the final cracks appearing when Mirabel accuses Abuela of not caring about the family, because she's right. All of the gifts that Abuela subconsciously chose were things that would guarantee the success of the town, except one. Antonio's gift was chosen by Mirabel, and it is truly for himself. Mirabel has this adorable scene in the nursery with Antonio where she gives him a jaguar she stitched for him. You can also see his other animal friends on the gift box she gives him. Antonio holds Mirabel's hand on the way up the stairs for the ceremony. He even wraps his hands around her arm the same way he put his hands around the candle. Minus the arms because of the size difference, obviously. Communicating with animals might have all kinds of fun and helpful applications in town, but note what Abuela says when Antonio has his animals warm up to her seat. But note what Abuela says when Antonio has his animals warm up her seat. Quote, I'm sure we'll find a way to put your blessings to good use. She doesn't already have an idea in mind, even though Antonio literally just showed her that his animals not only understand what he says, but they're willing to obey him. She's afraid of machete-wielding maniacs, and her grandson just got the power to tell a jaguar to go rip a dude in half. There is at least one really important use of that power that shouldn't be too far from the forefront of her mind, but she clearly hasn't put that together yet. But Mirabel already knows he loves animals and doesn't have a lifetime of trauma and suffering to inform her ideas of what gift would be best for the family. Antonio's door depicts him wearing the outfit he was wearing when he got his gift, but the pictures we see of the children standing in front of their doors when they got their gifts, all their doors depict them as older and wearing the outfits we see in the movie. Antonio is the only character whose door depicts them wearing the clothes that do not depict his gift, because at that point, he's a blank slate. That's also why Mirabel, and probably the others too, but we only explicitly see it with Mirabel as a child, wore a white dress like a christening gown when she got no gift. She was also a blank slate. The doors all depict Abuela's desire for the maturation of their power so they can help the village, except Antonio's. I read somewhere that the doors are intended to mature with their owners, but the pictures clearly show adult depictions on the doors. So I can only assume that the doors aged faster because of Abuela forcing them to grow up quickly. Antonio is going to be the only one of those kids that gets a real childhood. When the Madrigals all get their gifts back in the end, it's because Abuela ceded control of the family to Mirabel. At the end of the movie, when Casita is remade and everyone gets their powers back, it's not because, yay, everything goes back to the status quo. It's because when the house is remade, Abuela has finally accepted that she should step down. She's learned to let go. She no longer needs to guide the Encanto. She's been ruling out of fear that she would lose her home again, and she did. She faced her worst fear and realized that it really wasn't so bad after all, because her granddaughter was able to lead the family through the strife she was so afraid to face. As the sole owner of the candle, Casita no longer has to buckle under the pressure of serving two masters. Even though their gifts were basically being exploited, those gifts still make the family who they are. They just need to use them in ways that make them happy, instead of working every minute to serve their grandmother's traumatic fears. Whew, I know that was a lot, but I really, really felt like this deserved all this time, because this is such a great theory. I love this so much, and I also really don't like Abuela. And that's probably because of some family trauma within my own life. I need to go talk to my therapist, but I think this is great. It adds more layers to an already incredible film, and I will echo what some of the comments say, in that this is one of the most beautifully well-thought-out theories for a Disney movie I've ever heard. I would love to hear what you guys think about all of these. Did you have a favorite? Were any of these too dark? Were they not dark enough? Would you like me to find some darker fan theories out there? I would love to do that. Definitely let me know. But folks, that is a good place to wrap up here. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Filuminati. As a reminder, Eric and I will be seeing Wakanda Forever tomorrow night, weather permitting, you know, as long as everything is solid here on our end, which I assume it should be. Our spoiler-free review of the film will be coming out next Monday. We also have a lot of great stuff planned for the rest of the month, including a new international feature episode. Eric has an awesome intro to anime episode coming up for you. And at the end of the month, this is all going to culminate with an episode of The Game Room Where It Happens, where we will be talking about God of War Ragnarok in depth as we plan on beating it here over the next couple of weeks. Brand new listeners, you can find our episodes literally anywhere you listen to your podcast. But if you do find yourself listening on Apple or Spotify, please do us a huge favor and leave us a 5-star review. Make sure to check out the show notes for our YouTube link for all of our live streams. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Wait For It Podcast and on Twitter at Wait For It Pod. Folks, I'm Phil Smith, a.k.a. Phil the Filipino. And do not forget, we release new episodes every Monday and Wednesday. And all you got to do is wait for it.
So, I heard you're looking for a go-to source for entertainment.
Wait for it.
Gaming.
Wait for it.
Anime.
Plus Ultra!
Mr. Eric Almighty and Phil the Filipino?
Yeah, they've got you covered.
And all you gotta do is wait for it. This is the Wait For It Podcast.